The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
It's a great Monday. Thanks for being with us. Brock Huard with Fox College Football and Sirius XM will be with us. The Riser, as we called him back in the day when we first started doing this in 2012, and now here he is 9 years later doing big-time games. Always good to chop it up with Brock Huard on the college football scene. What does he make out of Brock Purdy as a future NFL quarterback? What would he tell Spencer Rattler if he were to sit down and talk with him today? What is his evaluation of Jaden Daniels as an NFL prospect? Where is the Pac-12 conference? Who should the next coach at USC be? I got a lot I want to talk to Brock about. And we'll have Brock Huard with us. John Wilner, Wilner Hotline. All things around the Pac-12 conference. Was it really a victory by the U of A with COVID all around Cal? What's John's view on that? What is Arizona State facing as they come into Seattle this coming Saturday? Washington had a lot of stuff happen up there last week with their head coach, Jimmy Lake. We'll get into it with John Wilner. Opening comments brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. I had a tremendous weekend. And to top it all off, and I'll get to the Cardinals in a minute, because it was fun. So when we built this company, I just am not one to put us in for awards. I've never been a believer in that. I've never nominated myself when people do best ofs and all that, best of this, best of that. I've seen it. I've been in the spaces where they hire PR firms and PR firms go out and do all the pushing and all that stuff. And, you know, please vote for me. I'm never going to do that stuff. And someone came to me and like, you know, this is your company. These are your people. And when they have good stuff and they're like, you've never nominated anything you've done in 30 years. No, when I win awards and there's awards back there and there's awards around, but it means more when it's not. It means more when you're not doing this. It means more when you're not going out there and saying, hey, you know, look at us. Let's go buy some PR by buying this table or buying that judge or this or that. I've seen that stuff. So for the first time in 30 plus years of doing this business, because I am the CEO of this company, I'm very proud of the work that people do. I said, you know, you guys should submit for Emmys. So we ended up with three nominations of the staff, Spurge, Devin Henry, and myself, and the Iron Man. We put in six, and three were selected as finalists, which is awesome. Just being nominated for an Emmy Award is cool. And so Saturday night, I went up to the Phoenician. While everybody else was working, I felt like a dope. I'm in a penguin outfit and I'm having a nice time and interacting with all sorts of cool people. The Rocky Mountain Emmy people, it's the first time I've ever been involved in this. And it's a tremendous event. And people have said, you know, you need to be involved in this through the years. I just haven't. I'm busy. I have games to go to. I have four kids. I don't have time for this. But as years go by and the four kids goes down to one kid, it's like, okay, I'll make time. And so Tom Leander goes into the silver circle. They honor someone for their consistent effort and excellence of broadcast. Tom is someone that I've always liked and admired. There's Tom on Saturday night. We had a great chat. I'm so proud to see him go up on the stage and get a little bit emotional. He had the first guy that hired him in Monterey came down for this event. It's so cool. And you guys know Tom Leander. Tom Leander is one of the best people around town. And it was just tremendous. Bob Adlock took care of getting him nominated. Tommy, in all honesty, give you guys a little bit behind the scenes, pull the curtain back. Tom Leander was supposed to be with me last Thursday. And when the Sarver news broke, Tom called me. He's like, I can't do it. I'm like, I agree with you. You should not do something on the air because I'm going to have to ask you, you know, what do you think? And so, you know, that's just not, I'm not going to put anybody in harm's way on that. And so Tom goes in, Tara Hitchcock, who I worked with at Channel 3 for all those years when I was part of 3TV. Tara went in, and there's Tara all done up, and I go over and take a picture with her, and she's like, I can't stand because I just got my dress adjusted the right way. So, okay, I'm not going to say, oh, well, who cares? And so Tara goes up on stage, and she's waxing and saying all sorts of cool things. And then Bruce Hafner goes in, and Lisa Fuller McGee. These are people I've worked with. These are teammates that I've had in the past. Tom used to have me on Suns pregame shows. So it was just really, really nice. Nice ballroom, nice event, black tie. And I'm at a table. We're at table two. We're with some of the Cardinal people. They were nominated. And when Devin's story came up and he won, and I asked Devin a month ago, I'm like, hey, you should come to the Emmys with me. I'll get you a seat. Nope, it's NASCAR weekend. That's what that dude's all about. That's what that dude's all about. That is, you know, the award stuff, yeah, it's cool. But I have a job to be at. I don't need to be away from it to see if I win an award or not. So, you know, I shot a little video over to him. He's out at the track on Saturday night. Devin basically lives at the track. Like, you know, you saw the fox the other night at the ASU game that lives in the stadium. That's Devin. Devin's a fox at a Phoenix Raceway. He just lives there. Probably has a hammock somewhere around a couple barrel cactuses for all I know. So Devin ends up winning. Spurge ends up winning. It's a story that he did when he was at Cronkite, was an intern for us. We ran the whole version of it. I was very pleased with Spurge, and Spurge ends up winning. And Iron Man and I, we lost. Iron Man, we lost to Mark Tarbell. That's not a bad person to come up short to, but just the simple fact we were nominated, it was fun. And it was great seeing so many people in the broadcast community. Our industry is under siege. You know, we're the evil empire. Yeah, of course we are. We're the reason why you guys aren't winning. We're the reason why. It's always us. Oh, you're so negative. Ah, rah, rah, rah. I don't know. You haven't been in the playoffs in 6 years. So it was really encouraging to be around such a great group of journalists and people that I hadn't caught up with in so long. And I just can't say enough about Tom Leander's speech and the way that he went about it. And it's so, so good for him. So that was... that was Saturday. So now let's get over to on the field. I think like you, many of you, is what I was seeing yesterday on social before the Cardinal game started. It's, well, it's a good thing that we have a huge, huge win run here in the front half of the season. And I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, you know, this is not going to go well for him. Chase Edmonds goes down, but, you know, Colt McCoy is pretty darn good. And some people had said in the offseason, I think it was Peter and Daryl Moose Johnston. I remember Moose telling me in one of his segments, he said, you know, Colt McCoy is going to be a real key to the Cardinals this season. Because, guys, when they put the extra game in, you may think it's only one game. When you're doing car crashes over and over and over, everybody's going to get hurt. Everybody is. And so there's Colt McCoy starting for Kyler Murray and not missing a beat. It was one of the best victories I can recall for the Cardinals in a long, long time. You know, I'm never going to do the top 10 victories in Arizona Cardinal history. And here's the Mount Rushmore. And, oh, okay, you don't feel like doing a show today. Let's do Mount Rushmore. We're not doing that. This was so impressive on so many levels. It's a divisional game. Cardinals already beat San Francisco. You know that San Francisco needed this game. They did. And they had every reason when Chase goes down and there's no DeAndre and there's no A.J. Green and just all the Hugh leaves the lineup, just all of the injuries, all of the reasons that you consider today and say, well, you know. And instead, they just didn't win. They kicked their ass all over the field. Like, that was just an old-fashioned ass-whooping that I saw yesterday. And we don't see that happen very often with our hometown heroes on the gridiron. We don't. And they keep doing it this season. You look this season, what did they do to Cleveland? I thought they kicked their ass. And so when you see the physicalness, the physicality, we like to say, that's a physical team. San Francisco's physical. And the Cardinals just put the blade down and blew right through them. And now they're in a tremendous position, in my opinion. In my opinion, there's no reason. There's really no reason to put Kyler out there, DeAndre out there, or anybody out there unless they're completely 100% ready to go, because the following week you're at Seattle. You have Carolina this week. Carolina's beat up. Carolina's not great. Carolina got worked over by New England yesterday. Yeah, they have Christian McCaffrey, but if you have anybody that needs to have what I'd call a mini bye, this would be the time. even if you drop a game in November, yeah, you don't want to lose a game. But just realistically, you look at the way the schedule's laid out, you get through Carolina and Seattle, now you're at the bye week. If you have some players that are nicked up and they don't play here in the middle of the season because the Cardinals are sitting there with such a big run-up now at 8-1, they can afford a game or two here where they may not come away with a victory. And the bigger prize is going to be, are you ready to go the last week of the season when you're playing Seattle here? Are you going to be ready to go when the playoffs start? There's no way this team, here's the infamous Iron Man, make sure you're rolling on this. The infamous no way, here's the guarantee. There's no way they're not going to the playoffs. Okay, I just said it. There's no way that they're not going to get to 11 or 12 victories. They're going to go to the playoffs. And so you got to manage your injuries. If Chase Edmonds is dinged up, then put Eno Benjamin back out there and see if he can truck over Dre Kirkpatrick again. That was a thing of beauty. You know, to pull out page 74 of the playbook where Christian Kirk is throwing a football. I sent a tweet over to Jason Mons about, did you teach him that at Saguaro? And just the creativity, and then the defense goes out there. Marcus Golden continues to be a, you know, as good a player as you're going to want to have out on the field. Look, all of us, me, you, most everybody who's willing to man up and say, yeah, I was wrong, we all wanted Steve Keim fired, and there was many reasons to have him blown out. Many, many, many missteps, missed picks, many, many, many missteps. Failed on a coach, miserably failed on a coach, miserably failed on a quarterback. It happened, okay? And instead, I have to sit here today and say, look at what has happened here. I can only go off of what has happened most recently. When a team misses the playoffs for 5 years in a row, 6 years in a row, whatever, you start looking at things and saying, what is going on here exactly? And when they miss on first-round picks and when they miss on quarterbacks and coaches, it's very fair for us to sit here and say, the heck, you need to make a change. And Michael, to his credit, said, and some people disagree with this, said, no, this is our guy, and Steve is still here, so let's just go through the track record of, and you tell me, was James Conner a great pickup in the offseason? J.J. Watt. Last year, Marcus Golden for a pick. You know, go down the list. Was Rondell Moore a good pick in the draft? Yeah, the question's still out about Zaven Collins. Sure, sure. But, you know, you hear and you see some glimpses. Was A.J. Green a good pickup? Well, if you're at the Packers game, he wasn't. So when you look at what they've done across the board, and I'm not going to sit here and go through every last name on the roster, but the body of work in 2021 is a lot better than the body of work in 2019 or 2018. And people don't like to say, hey, they're wrong. I was wrong. People don't like to, you know, the other side of the coin is, oh, no, no, all is well. No, it's not. Josh Rosen, no, that wasn't good. Steve Wilkes, no, that was terrible. So I can only go off the latest, and that's it. And for right now, where they are, tremendous. Tremendous. Who had this? Who saw this coming? They should be 9-1. And if they're shorthanded and they don't make it to 9-1, Colt McCoy ends up being just a tremendous addition yesterday. The dude missed on 4 passes yesterday in 26 attempts as the backup. Did you see what Jordan Love did yesterday for Green Bay? Did you see? So, you know, some good stuff. I watched back the ASU game. Yeah, they won. They're at Washington. The U of A game was it a game or not a game? Was U of A's game, that's what I've gotten, and fairly or not, yeah, a lot of ASU fans are like, oh, yeah, they didn't really play a game because of COVID, and Garbers wasn't there, and so on and so forth. Look, if you guys were in the same situation as U of A fans were losing their minds, and they should. They should. It's about time that came to an end. You know, Devin ends up winning an Emmy for a story. I'm going to get to Devin and NASCAR, and then we'll take a break. Back on the Emmys. So Devin ends up winning for a story that he did on a guy named Armani Williams. And go look it up on the site. It's a black NASCAR driver that is autistic. And I remember Devin sent me a note one morning, really early. He said, "Hey, Good Morning America would like to use the story, the footage from the story. And should we let them do it?" I was like, "Yeah, as long as they keep Sports 360 AZ in the upper left corner, absolutely we'll make it happen." And they did. And so Devin found a story that I think he's going to post this week. He found a story. I'm not even going to give it away. He just found a really good story that he took the time to tell, and it's going to pop up on the site in the next couple of days. He was out there all weekend long. If you didn't see Kyle Larson, Denny Hamlin, and how the race went down, Devin has a recap of it. It's up on the site. So I'm very, very proud to wrap this up on both Spurge and Devin. And to give you just a little bit more behind the curtain on things, so we've done some documentaries this year, and I've heard from many of you that you like the documentaries that we're doing. Our partners love the documentaries that we're doing. We have another documentary that's going to drop in 3 weeks. I got the script today from Brandy Aguilar. This is a script on a doc. And I think the last time, I've not even made it through yet. I think she said it's a 24-page script on the dock, and it's going to be tremendous. It's going to be tremendous. And so we got a lot of good things going on, and I'm very proud of our team and what everybody does and how they're all into it. On the high school front, this is Chandler Hamilton week. You are going to see a lot of stuff on the site for Chandler against Hamilton. If you've not gone to Chandler against Hamilton, you should take it in. You should. I have people who will say to me, "Why do you do high school stuff? Isn't that beneath you?" No. It's never beneath me. The minute that I think that we should just be like everybody else and just do pro stuff and some college stuff, there's not a chance. No way. High school is where you see these guys when they first start to emerge. And if all you do is pro stuff, you're not working your tail off behind the scenes on a Friday night at a high school game. You're missing out. It's a breath of fresh air, actually, for me and the staff. It is. So Chandler Hamilton's this week. And make sure you're at that game. It's on Friday night. If you're going to go, you got to get there at 5:30. It's one of those deals. At 7 o'clock, there's no way you're going to find a place to park. And Jordan Hamm from our recruiting side told me there's upwards of 30 players that are going to go on to college. Some will go on to the NFL, but we don't like to talk about that stuff and put the pressure on the kids. But there's going to be at least 30 Division I players on the field between the two squads at all levels. And that'll be on Friday night. All right, on the college front, Brock Huard is next. Kind of a state of the union. I want Brock to give me some feedback on what would he tell Spencer Rattler? What does he make out of Brock Purdy as a future NFL quarterback? What does he make out of Jaden Daniels and how he's played? And then John Wilner, that's all straight ahead. All right, let's take a minute here to talk about DraftKings. This is important, guys. The football season is rolling on. New users can bet $5 to win $200 in free bets if your team wins this week, thanks to our partnership with DraftKings. Really happy to have them on board. Here's how to claim this offer. Sign up for a DraftKings Sportsbook account. Make your first-time deposit of $5 or more. Place a $5-plus wager on your football team, and if they win, you win $200 in free bets. It's that easy. Just go to dkng.co/sports360 to claim this offer. Again, that's dkng.co/sports360 to claim this offer. Act now. This offer won't be around forever, thanks to DraftKings. As promised, it is really good to see the riser who has risen. That's what we called Brock Huard like back in 2013, 2014. You're not the savior, okay? But you have done very well for yourself, my friend. You were at Michigan over the weekend with Fox, seeing Indiana and the Wolverines. I just want to have you on a big picture on a whole bunch of things. So let's just start this. CFP comes out Tuesday. Where are things in your mind in terms of Pac-12? Can Oregon hang on? And just who are the four right now?
Well, I think Oregon is in a group with about, I don't know, 20 others, Brad. Just throw them all in the blender and mix them up and see who and what you want to come out with. I mean, Alabama has looked mortal. Committee doesn't obviously like the American Conference in Cincinnati at all. They made that abundantly clear. They continue to just love the SEC, you know, based on last week's rankings. What was it? 7 of the top 17, including a 3-loss Mississippi State team. So they're just setting the table to tell you, listen, there's going to likely be 2 SEC teams in this playoff. So, you know, that's kind of where I saw, you know, the committee and the first rankings. But outside of Georgia, everybody else is vulnerable. Everybody else is mortal. Everybody else is human. I think that's healthy for college football. I don't know if I would necessarily just call it parity and like define that as parity.
Yeah.
But certainly compared to years past, you know, I've seen Ohio State in person. I've seen Michigan State in person, seen now Michigan in person. So I've seen the big three from the Big Ten. And are they that much better than Oregon? Nope. Saw Oregon in person too. In fact, right, Oregon went to Ohio State. Now, C.J. Verdell was there. Other pieces were there. So they're not the same team necessarily today that they were then. But, yeah, I mean, after number one, Brad, I think that there's a whole lot of teams very, very similar on any given weekend, and we've seen that all year, that can beat one another.
Brock Huard with Fox. Also, you can hear Brock on Sirius XM, Channel 88. He does his thing on the college football scene. You're a smart guy, okay? And if you're in a position where you should be a ruler over college football, because there is not somebody, I think a lot of us have said, why is there nobody overseeing all of college football like we have with commissioners elsewhere? Brock, as you've gone through this college season and just through the years, if you were to step back and say, we got to fix some things, and it may be Pac-12 or it may just be big picture, what are you looking at? What's on your lens?
Well, it's kind of much like our country, Brad, and not to get political, but you know, we are so divisive. It's so angry. There's so many differences. You know, well, there's two sides, but then there's a whole bunch of layers all over the spectrum of that yelling at each other. And college football in some way, it mirrors that, parallels that, you know, from where you are geography wise of how you approach and the decisions you make within your conference and your fiefdom. Right. I mean, you just got fiefdoms. That's what you have. You have the SEC fiefdom, their powerhouse. You have the Big Ten fiefdom, right? And their history and their generations. You got the Big 12 that's hanging on for dear life. You got the two Eastern and Western seaboards, right, near the saltwater that just, you know, approach things politically with on their upper campuses, the decisions that they make just very differently than so many others. So if you think a commissioner of the NHL, Major League Baseball, the NFL, and the NBA gets booed, I don't know what a commissioner of college football, what chance they could possibly have, right, to bring them all together. How you do that, you know, and the further along we go in this, right, and they all got their own networks, and they all got their own revenue streams, and they don't want to share their pots of gold. And the further that we've gone down this road, just the more difficult it's become to just level any kind of playing field in college football.
If I were to look at the state of Arizona, I believe where college football is heading eventually is there's going to be 40 or 50 schools up here doing one thing. And there's going to be the rest that are doing something here. And I believe the University of Arizona will be here simply with facility. They're landlocked. And Arizona State will be here. There may be that ability to get U of A up here. If you're looking at college football, is that where we're going? Is it there going to be Washington State just simply can't play in the same league as Washington or Oregon State with Oregon? Is that where it's going, Brock?
I mean, I hope not. I think you and I don't know about what's it been, 10 years or so since we met, you know, and I think early on we talked about this, where this is going. Is this going to get to four super conferences? And is it, you know, going to be these Power Five schools? And now even in the Power Five, how many of them want to play football? How many of them legitimately can play and compete? You know, I think what I've learned, Brad, and just seeing it and getting a chance to do this for, I don't know, 15 years now across the whole country and see so many of these programs and schools. I think what's different today, certainly than when I played, maybe even when I started doing this broadcasting, is how much tension there is on some of these upper campuses, right? That upper campus versus lower campus. You know, when I used to wear my gray sweatsuit, it's a big deal. Intercollegiate Washington Athletics. Like, you got that sweatsuit, that was like your uniform. Like, yeah, you know, I'm sacrificing, I'm doing this, I'm playing this sport, and there's a lot of work, and I'm committing a lot more time and energy than normal students who get to just party every night and party every weekend and everything else. Like, no, we get to do this. And there were at times little glares. I remember sitting in a drama class and this young student was just like, I hate jocks. And I'm like, oh, that's really nice. Thanks.
Welcome.
You know, yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah, have a good day.
And there was some of that, but there was also, I think, an appreciation. There's 75,000 at Husky Stadium every Saturday. I play all those games. I mean, there's just a history, and that just kind of even trumps some of those dynamics. But now, across a lot of these schools, especially on the coasts, Brad, how much does Stanford as a brand want football? How much does Cal Berkeley want? football. How much does the University of Washington want football? Right? Compared to who you're playing against, where at Alabama and Georgia and Clemson, you have seen football re-energize that entire brand, enrollment, giving, endowments. Like, I've talked to Chris Peterson about this a bunch, right? And it's just some of the challenge in some of these places is, hey, you've got to, if you're going to compete, you got to go for it. You got to, you know, it's got to matter to you. It's got to mean something. And I think, unfortunately, in the conference that you and I love, that I played in, that you cover, that tension between upper campus and lower campus of what we want to be, where does football rank? How important is this engine? Do we want it driving, you know, some of our branding in our universities? And I think out West, unfortunately, when you're competing with those schools that I mentioned, you know, it, unfortunately, it's just not the same battle.
Before I get you out of here, and it's well put, I want to just run through some things on the field. You were at Michigan last week, and you have Michigan State this week. You've been in the Big Ten a lot this year. Yeah. Is there that big a separation, and does Michigan get Ohio State this year?
No, I don't think there's that big a separation. I think all of them do things very well. Ohio State has the cleanup hitter. I think that's the biggest difference, right? You got a teams that playing some good baseball, right? Fundamental baseball, belief, small ball, moving runners along, playing great defense, right? Got managers that have a clear conviction and plan like Mel Tucker and Jim Harbaugh, and, right? So to me, I think some of a baseball analogy fits or at least works here. Got a lot of good teams, but Ohio State still has the 3-4 hitter, right? I mean, they just got these this offense and a plethora of riches offensively that when they're on, they're just still different than everybody in their conference and you know, at a speed and a game-breaking and a home-run-making ability. Now, Kenneth Walker at Michigan State has been a fascinating study. I mean, what a great guy. He's totally re-energized that lineup and created a sense of belief there, but I don't think they're that much different watching Oregon and their team. And they certainly have some star power and some different makers, and their lineup is right there. And heck, they went into, right? And you can never diminish that. They went into that house as 17.5 point dogs and beat them that afternoon and ran for nearly 300 yards in doing so. So yeah, there's, as I said, at the start of this conversation, there's a lot of teams, there's a lot of lineups that make it pretty interesting. And if the Atlanta Braves can be two games under 500, wherever they were in July or August, before they remade themselves and got hot and found that sense of belief, we may just find that in college football this season.
When you see Brock Purdy, and now he's coming to the end at Iowa State, what do you see for him at the next level?
I see a guy, and I got to see them in person twice. I got to watch him practice on a Friday, got up to Ames, Iowa. That was, I think I've got three Power Five schools that I've not been to now. Three out of 65. That's it.
Awesome.
So I was able to check Ames off the list. Just awesome. That guy maximizes, Brad, every ounce of God-given ability he's had. And, you know, Matt Campbell will be the first to tell you, as he was to our crew, to anybody that will listen, he changed our program. His competitive excellence and grit and fight. At the next level, I don't know. Can he be Sam Ehlinger? I think that would be probably the comp in the conference. Same, you know, kind of just undersized, gritty, tough, amazing athlete. You know, his arms aren't terribly long. His hands aren't very big. There's some things that the NFL scouts I know right now are going to be a little leery of. Like, that doesn't check all the boxes we need. But I know that he'll probably play in the league for a long time. He'll be on somebody's roster, like Chase Daniel, you know, has been for 15 years. It's probably another good comp in that conference. But, man, has that guy gotten everything out of God's given him.
What would you tell Spencer Rattler today?
That is a great question. I would tell him that every single day that you got to maximize your opportunity. The same thing I tell my young little nephew that's a freshman at Washington, right? That I think believed in his heart of hearts he's going to be the guy this year, and they were going to make it happen. And he's had to grind and persevere and push. And it's in these times that you really do grow. That at 45, I can look back now, and it's easy to say, right? That, oh, adversity makes you stronger. It shows your stripes. It shows your true colors. But it's, you know, it's absolutely true.
Yeah.
And Spencer, day that you got this day, you make the most of this day. And at the end of this season, there will be people that will want your skill set. You may be able to come back to the West Coast, and there are going to be a lot of people that would want your ability and your experience and your talent. But you got to maximize these days when you're in the valleys and make the most of them that will pay dividends down the road.
I know you haven't seen Arizona State in person, but have you seen enough of Jaden Daniels to get an idea of where he's heading, what his ceiling is? There's a lot buzzing around that he's going to go to the draft. You know, is he ready? They're never quite ready. What do you see out of Jaden Daniels from a distance?
Yeah, I see him kind of in the entire grouping of all the quarterbacks out west been disappointing, right? I've just not seen that step. He kind of hoped with Dorian that he could stay healthy at UCLA, and he showed flashes. But, man, quarterback play, especially at that next level, is not about flashes. It's kind of to Spencer points, like day by day, you have got to show progress. Is he better today than he was as a true freshman? Is he bigger? Is he stronger? Mm-hmm. Does he have more urgency? Does he have total command? Or is he still kind of chewing on that mouthpiece and just kind of having this – I don't know, man. I like a sense of urgency. You mentioned Brock Purdy. Just a sense of urgency, man. You attack each day. You get better every day. And I think, Brad, that's been a big problem in the conference this year out west. I'm not seeing that with a lot of these quarterbacks. Is Anthony Brown better today than he was week two at the Horseshoe? I can't say that.
I don't think so.
Is Dorian better year four than he was year one? At times, but certainly not in consistency. Is Jaden better today than he was 2 years ago? I can't say that watching that game the other night and some of the decisions. And again, just the urgency, the growth, the body, all of it, you know, you should be developing. And like, unfortunately out west, that's just not happening in a lot of spots.
Real quick hits. I'll get you out of here. Next head coach at USC, couple names that you think this makes a lot of sense.
I mean, James Franklin, but by all indications, I think he's intrigued deeply by LSU. Mm-hmm. And this is what's going to be hard for all the schools out west. You know, if Washington ends up making a move,
yep.
If Herm steps down at ASU,
Washington,
right?
I mean, State, UCLA.
Washington State is open. UCLA, if Chip doesn't get to 7 wins. I mean, I think folks will look at these jobs out here, unfortunately, a little bit like they do in the Big 12 right now. Like, well, where is this conference going? How can we compete? You know, do they want to invest? Mel Tucker last year is like, yep, all right, I'm good. I'm going to go to the place where I'll have all the resources in the world. Well, they will support me. Well, I can put a staff together. You know, I'll be complimenting. All coaches talk about complimentary football. Well, head coaching job in today's game is complimentary off the field. So do I get all these assets to go attack these teams that you want me to compete with? They do it in Eugene. Phil Knight does it in Eugene and has given, you know, Mario and that staff everything they need. Outside of that, it's hard to come by out west.
Stay well, stay safe. You do great work, my friend. It's good seeing you. Thanks.
You bet, Brad. It's always a blast.
And we're back with more after this timeout. The football season rolls on. New users can bet $5 to win $200 in free bets if your team wins this week thanks to our partnership with DraftKings. Here's how to claim this offer. You sign up for a DraftKings Sportsbook account. That's easy. Make your first-time deposit of $5 or more. That's simple. Place a $5-plus wager on your football team, and if they win, you win $200 in free bets. That's right. Just go to dkng.co/sports360 to claim this offer. Again, that's dkng.co/sports360. Act now. This offer won't be around forever. All right, John Wilner is with us. Wilner Hotline, all things around the Pac-12 conference. And we have a victory to talk about in Tucson. Or was it, they played a game and, you know, Chase Garbers wasn't there. John, where do you come down on U of A's win? Or was it just they played a football game and the score, there are more points for U of A at the end of the day? Is the streak really over?
Oh, my gosh. For Arizona's standpoint, it's absolutely over, right? I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, Cal could have trotted out, you know, a bunch of 9-year-olds. As long as the NCAA counts that as a win for Arizona, that is all that matters. I think that the biggest thing is that cloud is gone, right? Mm-hmm. And nobody's going to say, well, Arizona, which would have lost 21 in a row if not for Cal having COVID problems, people just aren't going to talk about it anymore. It's gone. And so they can kind of move forward without that cloud over them. I mean, they got enough challenges, right, as it is with personnel and their depth chart. But now that's not just like – it's not like a sinkhole threatening to swallow the program every week.
As I'm watching the game, I continue to go back to they look better than they did 6, 7, 8 weeks ago. And I don't care who's on the field for them because they were god awful earlier in the season. They look competitive now.
Oh, absolutely. And I think they've looked competitive, right? That certainly they were competitive against Washington. They had that game until the interception. They are better. If the Arizona team, November 8th plays the Arizona team October 8th or September 8th, I would install the November 8th team as like a 10-point favorite, you know? And that's even including the fact that McLeod is out and the Cruz is out, right? I mean, Plummer is getting a little bit better, and they just you can tell the coaches have got a better feel for their personnel. Personnel's got a better feel for what they want to try to do. They have gotten better, no question.
You could even say that it's not going to be 70-7 this year when the Territorial Cup gets played. I've got some ASU friends down here that are, I won't say nervous, but they're just starting to say, well, they look better. We're going to get it figured out. What'd you make out of ASU on Saturday night against USC?
Well, they always play well against SC. Win or lose, you know, that's kind of a rivalry game for a lot of those ASU kids, right? And so, you know, it's amazing what happens when you don't commit 15 penalties. I mean, look, Jaden Daniels is not nearly as good as I expected, right? He's missing a lot of throws. I'm not sure you can argue that he's that much better than he was a year or two ago, to be honest, at least in terms of his efficiency. But SC is not any good. But at the same time, a win is a win for ASU too. They desperately needed it for, you know, kind of like Arizona. It doesn't matter how they got it, who they got it against. They needed it very badly. And now I think ASU's got a chance to finish pretty strong here. They're going to have 2 weeks of, you know, rain and wind in the Pacific Northwest, but they can get a win up there, one of those two places.
Okay, in both those places, let's get into that. Washington makes change on staff. Oregon State makes change on staff. Usually that's the front end of, if you guys don't get it figured out here in the next 3 weeks, we're going to make more than just a change of coordinators. Let's start with Washington first. What is going on with the Huskies, and what is ASU walking into this Saturday?
Well, it is. I can't remember the last time a head coach had as bad a week as Jimmy Lake had, you know, and only part of that was because of the score of the game and the coaching of the game, although some of that was mystifying. But, you know, the comments he made about Oregon and then the thing with him striking his player, it was a bad week. But their offense, the reason they're in this spot is because their offense has been terrible all season. He made a bad hire with his play caller, and it took him until, you know, middle of November to make a change. Washington has got some good players, right? I mean, I don't know that this change is going to spark something, but they do have good players. And, you know, it could be a difficult environment for ASU if the rain's coming in sideways and it's 45 degrees. But at the same time, ASU has got better players, I think, than Washington does. And if ASU is efficient and focused, it doesn't go through one of those stretches where they just have a whole bunch of mental lapses, I think ASU's got a good chance to win.
Okay, and then hearing some rumblings about Utah and Kyle Whittingham and retirement maybe. That's out there. It's been out there before. You hearing the same stuff?
Yeah, I am. And I think that I wrote something about how Utah may have a coaching change at the end of the year, slim chance, but because he may just hang it up, right? He's been there since 2005. I think, and I have, this is just my own, thoughts on the matter. If they were to win the conference and Utah went to its first Rose Bowl ever, I could see him hanging it up. He's had two players die in the last year. And he's been at it for so long. I just wonder if he would think that's it. I've done it all now. I'm ready to hang it up. So we'll see. But I do think that the extenuating circumstances of those tragedies may somehow factor in his decision as to whether this is going to be it, depending on how they do.
John Wilner, Wilner Hotline. I ask you this about every other week. The name at USC James Franklin, and then it's, well, James Franklin's going to go to LSU. We've gone through coaching openings every week, but I think the USC one bears repeating. Where are you at on USC from what you're hearing and seeing?
Very quiet. Yeah, very quiet and a lot of smoke, right? I'm not sure that James Franklin really is a candidate for the USC job. I don't know that he's not, but I'm not sure that he is either. I think that, you know, if I were going to look at three names, one is Luke Fickell at Cincinnati, who was USC's athletic director, Mike Bone, was at Cincinnati, hired Luke Fickell there. So they know each other very well. Matt Campbell at Iowa State, who's one of the best coaches in the country, just not sure if he's willing to leave the Midwest. And Dave Aranda at Baylor, I think is probably a name to watch. He was LSU's defensive coordinator a couple years ago when they won the national title. He's done a really good job at Baylor this year. And he's from California. He's like a Central Valley guy. So I would say those are like the three names that I feel most confident may actually be candidates, but they're keeping it very quiet. It's a very tightly run search, and there is a lot of smoke. Mike Tomlin, Jeff Fisher. I mean, that, you know, they may as well, you know, so it report Vince Lombardi's a candidate. So, and they've got another 5 weeks to make, just like Washington State. They don't have to make a hire till early December.
Yeah. But it's coming. I mean, it's coming. And letter of intent day is 6 weeks away right now. Arizona State has four verbals, four, and they're 6 weeks away from letter of intent day. So every situation you look at and say, okay, what's going to happen here and what's going to happen there? So,
well, yeah. And the thing that ASU wants resolution, I think even a bad outcome soon is better than no outcome soon for ASU.
With the NCAA.
If this drags on for months, it's their entire December, February recruiting will be ruined, and who knows what will happen for the next recruiting cycle.
I'll let you go off that. Good stuff as always. Thanks, John. Stay well.
Thanks a lot, Brad.
We're back with more after this timeout.